For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dollimore.
Welcome to the greatest podcast ever recorded. I am one of your hosts, Jesse Dollimore, joined today with a lovely, talented other co-host, Brittany Page.
So I want to start the show by asking you to please take some time today to pick up the phone and call your senators to demand that they use the leverage that they have to vote no on the continuing resolution. And Democrats are afraid of a government shutdown.
I thought you were talking to me. And halfway through that, I'm like, what do you want me to do?
No, I'm, you know, I'm...
Jumping right in.
We've been posting this on social media for I Doubt It channels on Instagram, Blue Sky, Facebook. We've been trying to get the message out there to get people to call their senators because the government funding is set to expire Friday night.
And we need to pressure Democrats here.
And so we want them to block the Republican bill that is essentially just going to give Elon Musk as much power as he wants over the budget. And we cannot give up our only recourse that we have to rein this in. And Democrats are afraid to allow the government to shut down.
202-224-3121.
So vote no.
One more time. 202-224-3121.
Vote no on the continuing resolution. Allow the government to shut down. And I know there's been concern even from Democrats. We'll see it in the comments, right? People will say it's going to harm a lot of people. I'm worried about the government shutting down. Yeah, but we're going to lose much more if the Republicans are allowed to grow their power and have this unchecked control over everything.
Yeah, we don't want to fund a government that is it exists in this case to harm Americans. Right. And that's what we would be doing. Also, it's like AOC has been saying, and I think very artfully and masterfully, that if they want to pass the Republican budget, let the Republicans do that. But if they're not going to negotiate with Democrats, then it is just the Republican budget, and they can go fuck themselves.
Right.
I added that little flourish in at the end. But yeah, it's absolutely true.
Right. And this is particularly important, by the way, for Democrats that are in safe blue states, like California,
yeah.
New York, you need to be hopping on the phone and talking to those people too.
Are you listening, Adam Schiff?
Yeah, it's in Kristen Gillibrand is apparently an hour ago reporting, suggesting that she's trying to make the case for allowing, the case against allowing the government to shut down.
Ugh.
So they're getting scared and they need to be afraid of you.
Yeah.
So get on the phone, make sure you call. It does make a difference. It absolutely makes a difference. Please do that.
Yeah, so listen, in a Senate filled with Fettermans, be an Elizabeth Warren. In a Senate filled with Mark Warners, who says, I owe the president his due, that's why I went to the address. Be someone who's good and decent.
Please. Now, as a little non-political thing, I do want to talk...
Oh, now we're going back. Now we're going to do an intro.
Yeah, yeah. We're taking care of the business first, and then we're kind of coming back around. So
it's like the podcast version of a mullet.
Yeah.
Business up front, party behind that.
Sure. So there used to be...
I thought that was pretty good.
There
Fuck
used
you, man.
To be this thing that happened where, like, TV shows were consumed on a weekly basis when new episodes came on. And it kind of helped fuel socialization in society, where a lot of people were watching the same show. If you're going to yawn, at least don't do it into
like
the mic.
Like water cooler talk you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah.
And yeah, I yawned. Be more entertaining to me. I'm fucking tired, man.
All right.
You know
right.
what I'm
All
doing
right.
over here?
All right. Yeah, we know. So...
We know.
So it used to be the case. Now it's the case where everyone binge watches things, and then no one is actually like watching the shows.
They're second screening it, I guess, is the new.
Yeah, they're watching everything on their phone while they're watching the show, and this is something that drives me absolutely crazy because I'm trying to recreate that time from years past when. You know,
did you see what happened on Sopranos last night?
Yeah. And you would like talk about it with people and talk about, you know, what this character did and what you think it means and what's going to happen next. And
let me give you an example. Years ago, Brett number one and I used to watch simultaneously. We would watch The X-Files and then immediately. And this is back in the day. When, like, you had to get on the right long-distance plan, and I had 10 cents a minute, so I would get on the phone, and then Brett and I would talk about the episode of the X-Files for, like, an hour,
mm-hmm.
breaking it down. I think we did the same thing with Sopranos, and now none of that seems to be a thing.
Yeah, and it drives me crazy because, so two shows we're watching right now that we really love week to week are The Pitt on HBO, or Max, whatever.
Yeah,
and
HBO, whatever.
Severance on Apple. And we have been huge Severance fans since the beginning when it came out like 3 years ago. And this season is so, so, so good. But The Pitt is also a really great show. And we're watching these shows week to week. And I have friends that are also watching these shows. And so I'll like go and try to talk to some of my friends about these shows. And there was this big twist that happened in Severance that we're not going to talk about. But it was kind of something that you could predict if you are like obsessive about the show, I guess. And so we had kind of predicted that this was going to happen in the show. We predicted the twist before it was revealed. And I was talking to a friend about it, and they were kind of marveling at the fact that I had figured this out, or I had seen the signs. And then I asked them, are you on your phone when you watch the show? And they said, sometimes.
Yeah.
And I wanted to punch a hole in the wall.
it was one of these moments when you found that out. Right?
Yes.
It was an absolute sad trombone moment.
Yes. And then there's also a group thread that we have where I asked someone who's watching the show. And again, I'm trying not to use names here because I don't want anyone to feel shamed. But
you should feel fucking shamed if you know who you are.
I asked in the group thread if they're watching the show with their phones in their hands, and they just, you know how you can hold a text down and emphasize it?
Yes.
They didn't answer me. They just reacted to my text. I'm like, oh, I think that's a yes. Mm-hmm. I think you are holding it in your hand. So it's like, it betrays the artistic intentions of the creators
wow,
of the,
look at
these
you.
Shows. No, it drives me crazy. I think it is a total betrayal of like artistry. I think it betrays what we are trying to do here as a society.
Well, what I think it is, it's very telling because you told me this a few weeks ago. I just learned this, that executives at like Netflix are giving notes on shows to say, hey, you need to describe what you're doing
mm-hmm.
while you're doing it in the show.
Right.
It's like exposition to the next level.
Right.
Like, oh, well, when I'm done washing these dishes, we're going to go and do the thing that you just said because people are on their phones and they need it like spoon fucking fed to them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm worried about it. It's very
You're worried
No, it's
about
very
it.
Concerning to me. And listen, I'm on my phone a lot.
Too much.
Yeah, too
much. Both of us
absolutely
are. Everyone is.
Absolutely, I'm on my phone too much. I will not deny that. I totally admit that. It's not good. It's unhealthy.
Some shows you can second screen. Of course.
Sure, but yeah, but if you actually want to know what's going on in the show, then you should put your phone down. And if you can't put your phone down for an hour to watch a show...
Yeah, largely, broadly, more universally, but I'm talking about some shows you can do that. Some shows you can't fucking do that. The Wire would be a show you can't do that on.
Yeah.
Good TV you can't do that with. Deadwood, Six Feet Under. The Sopranos.
I would also say you can't do it. You shouldn't do it. Like, you, those are shows that you should want to watch and learn from and be changed by. And I'm not trying to be corny, but like...
Yeah, but some... Well, because it's... We're talking about high art here. As corny as... I mean, really, it's... So much thought was put into every fucking frame of these shows that there are clues. Like, we watch... reaction videos. This is, I mean, there's an ecosystem of entertainment that has been built up around Severance, for instance.
Right.
Where you go and you watch episode breakdowns and it's like, oh, holy shit. They'll freeze frame on certain frames of the show and like, this is what we're seeing. I'm like, oh my God. It's awesome.
Right. So hopefully this was enough introduction talk to make you all comfortable. And
what are you?
For those of you who...
What's the guy's name? Nathan Fielder?
Was this
enough small talk for you to make you comfortable?
For those of you who hate introduction talk and just want us to get to the business, hopefully...
I hope you're hungry for nothing.
Hopefully we balanced the political getting straight to business with the not political not getting straight to business.
This could be one of those intro topics... that followed a stern lecturing about calling your representative at 202-224-3121. This could be one of those intro topics that we get a lot of feedback on.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's a lot of people who do second screen and will vehemently justify it to their end.
What are you going to say? I'd love. Try it. Give it a try.
Wow.
And
I'm going to be
rage listening to all of your voice memos. Give it a try. Okay, I'm kidding. No, I could be wrong. I could be wrong. It could be life-changing to second screen while watching a masterpiece. Yeah. All right. If you do that, 657-464-7609 or idoubtit at dollamore.com. So we do have some listener communication today. We do have a stacked show, so we're going to try to get into it. But we do have a voicemail here today from Devin in Texas.
Hey, Jesse. Hey, Brittany. This is Devin. I'm a listener out of Texas. And... tonight I was listening to the David Pakman show. He had a guest on his show, and they were discussing Republicans and fact-checking and how Republicans don't like to be fact-checked. And what they were bringing up is Republicans tend to say a lot, the fact-checkers are just against us. That is why they're saying what we're saying is wrong. And it's not and they're trying to say that it's not the fact that we are wrong and we are lying, it's just the fact-checkers are against us. And the reason we get fact-checked so often isn't because we lie more often. We're getting fact-checked because everybody is just against us. Because the media, the fact-checkers, are all just a bunch of left-wing liberal supporters. And it reminded me of similar situations where you discuss how media literacy needs to be taught. But the classes who teach it teach you to just support left-wing views. They are very against Republicans. In a Republican's eye, of course. And then it goes in the same vein of, oh, you're just liberal because you went to your college and this college indoctrinated you because the colleges are just against Republicans. Therefore, they're teaching you we're wrong because they just hate us. And it just made me think of the fact that most of the time nowadays when I'm debating people, on policy or current events or things that are happening, if they tend to be on the Republican side, they claim, oh, you just don't know what's really happening because of the fact checkers, because of the colleges, because of anybody that talks about media literacy. They don't debate policy or current events anymore. They debate the validity of the people who are saying maybe their facts are wrong. And it sidetracks the whole conversation, derails it. And it just creates this environment where you can no longer actually discuss anything. It is just somebody constantly saying, no, I'm a victim, I'm a victim, I'm a victim. And I was wondering if you two had any way to combat that and how to deal with that in a day-to-day situation, because I can no longer actually discuss things with people because I'm just being told I'm being spoon-fed things that are incorrect and that everybody just hates Republicans and that's why I believe the way I believe, not that I believe the way I believe because that's just what I truly think or feel or know. And so, yeah, if you all just have any insight on how you combat that and how you get around the roadblock that is everybody just hates Republicans, therefore your information is always wrong.
Well, thanks for the call, Devin. Before I answer, I need to know whether you second screen your TV shows.
Very important.
Now, listen, this is it's a difficult question, and there is no like concrete answer. In fact, the problem is going to get worse, certainly before it gets better. I think the only way, let me say this. Years ago, when I used to listen to a show called The Fifth Column, which was it's hosted by Matt Walsh and
Michael Moynihan
and Camille Foster.
It's not good.
A couple of used to be kind of normal, and then, you know, Camille's a dipshit. But Michael Moynihan said something about you don't enter into a conversation with a conspiracy theorist, like, let's say, a Holocaust denier. I think that was the specific instance he gave. Because you're armed with obviously the facts that you know that the Holocaust happened. But if you're not fully aware of all of the depths of the conspiracy theory that you're entering into to argue, you're going to get fucking wrecked, even though the facts are on your side. Because in this instance here, when you would just ask him, well, what's your evidence? Well, I read it on a site, and then the site is some wacky Alex Jones thing. You're not going to be able to combat their misinformation and conspiracy theories with just the evidence and the facts, because evidence and facts aren't valued by them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So really, there's no hard and fast, easy answer to the question because they don't value facts. They're not willing to change their minds when the evidence changes or their understanding of the evidence changes because they're not in it for that. They're in it to back up whatever Donald Trump says.
Well, so here's my first issue. At the beginning of the call, it was said Republicans don't like to be fact-checked. And I guess what I would say is no one likes to be fact-checked.
Yeah, sure.
No one likes to be wrong. It's uncomfortable when you're challenged. We all have, you know, confirmation bias. We all retreat into wanting to defend our beliefs. That's just kind of human nature, unfortunately. It's something that we're battling against just on a fundamental human level.
Yeah, it's generally a pride thing, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, obviously, we're in a unique moment before people get upset with me saying that, because they're like, no, it's different. Obviously, we're in a unique moment where we're seeing a lot of people who are resistant to believing facts, and they definitely tend to be on the right. That is certainly true. You can look at that when it comes to things like vaccine hesitancy growing, although there is kind of a crunchy population, although there's now like a crunchy to right-wing pipeline, right? I think if we had talked about that like 5 years ago, does everyone know what crunchy means, by the way? Is that disparaging or is that like a widely used term?
I think it's pretty widely used.
Okay.
Yeah, like liberal, like granola. I think it probably comes from like granola or something.
Yeah, like crunchy, hippie kind of
hippie
thing.
Hippie dippy, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like the vaccine hesitancy or refusal to get their children vaccines in like Marin County, California,
right.
North of San Francisco.
And that's why I said like maybe 5 years ago that would have been considered more of like the crunchy thing. But as it's gone like crunchy to right wing pipeline, we're starting to see that the vaccine hesitancy is taking over in the right
wing as well,
and with COVID.
I think a lot of that is rooted in anti-establishment ideas.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the media literacy thing, though, that Devin touched on is a huge part of the problem. And it is unfortunate that a lot of people will frame it as like a left-right issue, because when you look at sources that are legitimate, it's not as though they are promoting a left-wing viewpoint. It's just they're like reporting on reality. And that can be difficult for people who are on the right because they code that as left wing rather than reality.
Yeah.
And really, this starts in the schools. And this is why Republicans are attacking education, because technically we should start people young, right? About understanding things like confirmation bias and media literacy and how to properly assess what is real and factual versus what is propaganda and made up. And that's why Republicans are attacking education, because they don't want people to learn these skills. Because if kids learn those skills, they become adults who understand how the world works. So it's in their best interest, Republicans, to attack education and ensure that young people don't become adults who are able to understand the world around them.
Yeah, and the full-on assault on intellectualism, on expertise, mm-hmm. all of that, on science, is all part... They are all different parts of the same fight, of the same assault on facts.
Right. So your best odds here are things that we've talked about before, and that is using anecdotes, not necessarily going in with hard statistics, hard facts. Trying to convince people with anecdotes can be more beneficial sometimes, at least initially up front.
For people who don't value evidence.
Right.
Yeah.
And
my personal experience, oh, that sways me.
Right. Or people who just feel uncomfortable with like a fact check, right? Or if you're like in a conversation with someone and they say something incorrect and you're like, fact check, you know, that's immediately going to turn them off. But if you're like, huh, interesting that you say that. Yeah, in my experience, or I know someone who, you know, and it kind of depends on your attitude and your approach going in. If you approach it with kind of openness, curiosity, something that we call in the therapy biz, like therapeutic wonderment.
I was going to ask you to explain that.
Yeah, where you kind of, you know, act like you are surprised by something or unfamiliar with something, or you're, you know, unsure about what was just said and you want a little bit more information on that. And so you like ask a probing question that is based on what your knowledge of what they said actually means, because you know what it means, but you want them to like elaborate on it. It really depends on that. If you're like hostile, rude, or give off an air of, you're wrong, you're an idiot, and I'm going to correct you right now.
Why am I feeling attacked? Why are you fucking attacking me?
I'm not.
Me?
People are automatically going to shut down. So I'm just saying, like, these are some general tips,
this
I
is
would
why,
say.
This is why I don't argue on Facebook and haven't for years and years, because it's not my wheelhouse. I do come across as you're a fucking idiot, and I'm not going to sway anybody with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It depends on the day for me. Depends on the day.
Yeah.
The mood I'm in.
Well, thanks, Devin. I would love to throw this to the audience. If anybody else has any nuggets, any secret sauce, any secret weapons against this, 657-464-7609. And, of course, you can email a voice memo to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
We also got a message that I want to read from a Patreon supporter. And they did not put their name in the body of the message, so I'm not going to read the name.
Anonymous.
But they say, I listen to the show every single week, usually after I pick my 2-year-old daughter up from childcare, and she's a fan too. Good. Starting them young to not second screen. Am I right? All right. Now, when Brittany reads the names of the newest...
It always makes me uncomfortable when I find out little kids are in the... Because I don't talk like a little kid guy. I talk like an adult to adults.
Now, when
curse words, Brittany. I'm talking about curse words.
Back to the message. Now, when Brittany reads the names of the newest patrons, she repeats the name right after Jesse.
Oh, so, nice.
So, Brittany, I'm going to need you to be sharper with these pronunciations, ma'am. Love the show. So, thank you very much for that. And with that said, let's get into thanking our Patreon supporters.
Right.
And the pressure is on.
Everybody get your kids ready to repeat after after me, after I repeat after Brittany.
Okay. Nick Carr.
Nick Carr. Nick Carr. We're doing last names now, too, huh?
No, I think it's like a nickname or something.
All right.
Nicodemus P.
Nicodemus P.
Gary O.
Gary O.
Two If By Fire.
Two If By Fire.
Lori O.
Lori O.
Bruce Allen R.
Bruce Allen R. Can you hear the kids repeating?
Which is a name that I've seen before, so welcome back, or... Or
welcome your name twin.
Yes. Sue W.
Sue W.
Patricia N.
Patricia N.
RBM.
RBN.
Leslie R.
Leslie R.
Judith R.
Judith R.
Michael T.
Michael T.
Sam P.
Sam P.
Mike H.
Mike H.
Thomas M.
Thomas M.
Tim A.
Tim A.
DeCoco.
DeCoco.
Jack E.
Jack E.
Troy R.
Troy R.
Marguerite F.
Marguerite F.
And then a special shout out to our Patreon supporters who have increased the pledge, and that would be Chad K.
Chad K.
And Brian S.
Brian S. Thank you all so very much for helping support this show, helping defray production costs, and keeping the lights on around here. We appreciate it very much. If you would like to contribute, support the show, help us produce it, you can go to patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast.
We want to give one Patreon update, and this is a message that we got from Patreon about Apple and Apple's in-app purchase system. Now, the TLDR of this is if you're
don't do it.
If you're going to become a Patreon supporter, go to patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast. Do not do it through Apple's in-app purchase system.
What we're hearing is Apple's going to take 30%.
Right. So this is what they said. Hi, we're writing to let you know that your Patreon has been updated to use Apple's in-app purchase system. This means that all purchases of memberships and shop items through Patreon's iOS app will now include Apple's 30% App Store fee. As a reminder, Apple's fees do not affect your existing members. So if you are an existing member, this is not an issue. However, if you are wanting to become a Patreon supporter, do not do it through Patreon's iOS app. Do it through patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast. Otherwise, you're just giving money to Apple and
a multi-trillion dollar company.
And they don't need it. Okay. So, please keep your eyes peeled on your mailboxes. We've been getting messages from people who have received the end of year gift. Some people saying it brought them a smile and a moment of joy, which is very nice in these current times. So please keep your eyes on the mailbox. And probably after next week's episode is when I'll say, hey, if you haven't received it, let me know and I'll start going through that. We've also received under 10 rejections so far.
Pretty good.
Which is pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. So thank you very much. We appreciate you. And let's get to the show.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Stalemocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So I watched this like 10-minute investigative report from News Channel 5's Phil Williams, who did
He's
this.
Awesome.
He is. He did this feature on Patriot Front and how they're actually building like a new Aryan Nations is what I would compare it to in Tennessee. It's in the middle of the woods. It's like a compound. They showed footage from the helicopter where they found it and they filmed the area where all these buildings are under construction. They're having these Nazis meet and they're like having fight night and literally, you know,
hand-to-hand combat training,
beating the shit out of each other. Very reminiscent of my childhood. That is, I watched that video and I was like, oh my God, this is like being at my house when I was growing up. The Nazis would fight in the yard. Like it was, you know, very much, yes.
Your neighbors, they must have really loved that.
Bad times.
I'm sure the Homeowners Association really was grooving on bare knuckle Nazi fight night in the front yard.
Here's something I'll say though. I've been thinking about this recently. Is all these people who love to talk about how weak women are and they're not as fast and they're not as strong and when they're like talking about how trans women in sports and
just the general disdain and disrespect and hatred of women.
Yeah.
From Republican men and Republican women.
And I think for some reason, a lot of people don't code it as misogyny, but it's all I hear, and I would love, for example, like Charlie Kirk, to meet my mom in her prime.
Yeah.
And my mom has a lot of problems, but my mom in her prime, I watched her fight a Nazi in the yard and knock him down. And he walked home pissed, drunk. And
pissed drunk and pissed angry.
Yeah. And it was fantastic. And anyway, as an aside, I am talking about another Nazi. So, all right. Phil Williams. I'm going to link to this entire news package because I think it's really important to watch. But I did choose under 4 minutes of it to listen to because it's actually really scary the power that these people have and the power that they're building.
So Ian Michael Elliott is a longtime member of white power groups, including Patriot Front. Within Patriot Front, he's one of their lead recruiters.
Ian Michael Elliott, we discovered, is one of the people behind this 122-acre Patriot Front compound in Tellico Plains, Tennessee, located between Chattanooga and Knoxville. When we flew over in Sky 5, it appeared to be very much still under construction.
It appears that they're using this place to network and strategize. They're inviting, white supremacists from across the country into this compound to network and strategize.
This photo, obtained by News Channel 5 Investigates, shows Elliott with Rousseau at that East Tennessee compound, hosting another white supremacist group from Texas.
3, 2, 1, fight!
And this video posted online shows Elliott in a studio adorned with neo-Nazi symbolism, training men for bare-knuckled battle. Battle that often leaves these Patriot Front warriors bruised and bloodied.
Patriot Front will claim that they are nonviolent. But they're training in mixed martial arts. They're using their training in mixed martial arts to escalate confrontations and to hurt people.
Which is exactly what happened to a musician who tried to confront the group in Boston in 2022. A federal judge recently awarded the victim $2.7 million in damages, although it's not clear he'll ever collect. Police video shows that when a Patriot Front U-Haul was stopped shortly after that incident, one of the people present was Garrett Garland. He's the one on the right at the American Renaissance Conference back in the fall.
And this isn't your, granddad's KKK. This isn't the old school white supremacists. These guys are smart. I'll give them that little bit of credit, is they're smart in how they approach it.
Ryan Hunter says he believes it's critical that Americans see beyond the images that Patriot Front would like to project, to see that what they represent is neither good nor American.
And it's, incumbent upon all of us that see it for what it is, to combat it every chance that we get and tell what really this group is about and what their message is all about. And so that's probably my biggest takeaway from this.
See, f***ing high. Let's f***ing go.
And in addition to their marches, Patriot Front members have been implicated in defacing murals celebrating the achievements of notable African Americans. But because this is usually done under the cover of darkness, police aren't always able to make arrests. And that's where the public can help. If you see, these people out, vandalizing property, for example, get a tag number and call police. People can do something about this.
It is good to know. You interviewed a prosecutor who has taken on Patriot Front. Did that person have any tips for law enforcement here in Tennessee?
Absolutely. One of his ideas is that police should not simply treat these as nuisance events, vandalism, for example, in the case of those murals being defaced. Instead, he suggests prosecuting the wider conspiracy to deprive other citizens of their civil rights, to use laws with teeth that will really, really send a message.
So a little bit of a callback to what Devin called about earlier, about combating conspiracy theories. This Patriot Front group is the same one that got arrested in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, when they piled out of the U-Haul and were stuck upon their knees and then cuffed and stuffed into cars. And then the right wing said, oh, these are feds. This is not a real Nazi group. This is not a real hate group. This is not really a new neo-Nazi white supremacist group. These are federal agents, and this is a false flag. Well, I guess the federal agents are now actually Nazis who are building a compound and preparing for the incoming, soon-to-happen race war or whatever the fuck's going on. It's just another conspiracy theory.
Yeah, and there was actually a recent reporting, or I guess not recent, it was probably like February of last year, from the Idaho Capital Sun, about how North Idaho prosecutors lost the case against Patriot Front's white nationalist leader. So at the end of that news package, they talked about...
Russo is his name.
Yeah, they talked about what police should do, what people charging these cases should do, find something with teeth so that you can really get at these people. We see that that's hard to do. I mean, even and because of the will of the people who are making the arrests or charging the cases, or the power that these groups have, we saw it in Ohio. We talked about that recently, where the cops saw these Nazis pile into a U-Haul.
Yeah.
Illegally.
A different Nazi group, not Patriot Front.
Yeah, a different Nazi group in Ohio. We talked about this maybe two episodes ago.
No, I'm just highlighting that there are multiple Nazi groups across the country.
Oh, right, yes. And the cops watched them pile into the U-Haul and drive away.
Encourage them to get out of here.
And it's illegal.
Yeah.
And then the cops are saying weeks afterward that they are in the process of investigating and asking the public for any camera footage that they have.
When they witness it with their own eyes.
Yeah. And so, again, this is like the issue, right? I mean, you have these groups who are getting away with illegal activity. So at the end of that news package, when he's encouraging police to do something with teeth to really get at these groups, it just makes me sad that the infrastructure that we have in place is not seemingly invested in actually doing that. And unfortunately, these groups are only growing in power.
Yeah. Especially, and not only are they growing, they are feeling emboldened by the re-election of Donald Trump and the cast of white supremacists that he has around him and the white supremacist agenda that is not even like secret or buried or clandestine within the pages of Project 2025.
Right. So I'm going to link to that full video in the show notes so that you can go watch it. I would definitely recommend that you take some time and watch it. It's about 10 minutes. We also have been talking about Ed Martin in the U.S. Attorney's Office and Donald Trump's efforts to stack the Justice Department with loyalists who will protect him and go after the cases of people that he does not like or of people that are critics of him. And there's been just so many stories this week of corruption. I think you did one today on the Wall Street Journal reporting. That's one of the most remarkable stories that I've come across recently.
Are we going to talk about it or should I briefly say what it is?
Yeah, I can briefly talk about it.
Yeah, so Donald Trump, the Trump family is in talks with the Cheng Zhao Zhao or something is his name. He's the founder of Binance, which is a crypto exchange. He has pleaded guilty for corruption. He has been convicted of corruption. And the Trump family is now in talks with him to acquire, to be given a piece of his company. And as part of those talks, there's also talk of him being pardoned by Donald Trump, which is obviously a quid pro quo. Obviously, a pay to play. It's, mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll pardon you, but we want a piece of the action. We want to be part owners of your multi-billion dollar business that also has to do with crypto. It's naked, insane, open corruption.
Yeah, just remarkable. And everyone should go watch your video today.
And it's being reported on exclusively. They got the scoop. The Wall Street Journal. So this isn't The Guardian or The Intercept or The New Republic, Mother Jones. This is the Wall Street Journal owned by Rupert Murdoch, the same company that owns Fox News, Fox Business, the New York Post.
Right, right. Also, this week, a top official who was leading the Justice Department's Office of the Pardon Attorney came forward and said that she was fired just one day after refusing to recommend that Mel Gibson, we all know Mel Gibson, actor, you know, What a Woman Wants or something. Braveheart.
What Women Want.
Yeah. Not What Women Want. He is not. After she refused to recommend that Mel Gibson's access to firearms be restored. So she was fired after this happened. And she went on with Caitlin Collins on CNN and gave an interview. And what she ends this interview with is really remarkable. But I want to say the clip is going to start with her responding to a statement from Todd Blanche. And Todd Blanche is basically saying that her coming forward is like a violation of her.
Todd Blanche, former Trump attorney.
Yeah, that her coming forward is basically like a violation of ethical principles of her profession and
right.
is beneath the position that she held, right? So basically just saying that everything she's saying is false and that she shouldn't be coming forward because it's not ethical. So that's what she's responding to at the beginning of this clip.
Look, Caitlin, it's terrifying that the number two official in the Department of Justice believes that my ethical duty is to keep silent about what is going on inside the Department of Justice. My ethical duty as a DOJ employee is to uphold the laws of this country, to do justice, and to serve the people who I was appointed to serve. It is not to hide the fact that career employees like myself are being punished for expressing dissenting views and for refusing to follow directions.
And so when they're arguing that this is not the reason you were fired, is there any other reason that you believe that would have led to your dismissal?
I was not provided any information about why I was fired. But I'm noting as a factual matter that I was fired within hours of informing the Deputy Attorney General's staff that I could not fulfill this request.
You worked as the pardoned attorney. I mean, in this office, obviously, the president can decide this unilaterally without consulting the Justice Department who to pardon. Was your office consulted at all about the January 6th pardons that happened on his first day in office?
The job of my office is not to consult on those political, high-profile cases where presidents have made up their minds that they're going to pardon people. It's to make sure that average citizens are also able to get their cases in front of the president. So I didn't work on the January 6th pardons. I worked on trying to ensure that the president would grant clemency to other deserving people who don't have political connections or access to the White House through the front door.
And I think it's important to be clear, you were appointed in the Biden administration, April 2022. You're a former federal public defender. You've been critical of some of the Bidens, the pardons that President Biden did as well. But on the January 6th ones, the Justice Department is now arguing that the January 6th pardons extend to crimes that happened after January 6th for those individuals. Is that your understanding of how that pardon power works?
I think only the president knows what he meant in the way those documents were written. I will say that if my office had drafted those documents, it would have been very clear what they meant. We take great care to ensure that we write documents in a way that effectuates the intent of the president, and we were not involved in the drafting of those documents.
Can you just tell me what have the last, Trump's been in office for 7 weeks now, what have the last 7 weeks been like at the Justice Department compared to what it was like the previous years that you worked there?
The last 7 weeks have felt like 2 years. It's been incredibly stressful. Every single day is fraught with difficult decisions. Every word that is uttered, whether in a meeting or in writing, is something that we are all scrutinizing carefully. We're thinking very carefully about how we choose our words, because we know that if we say the wrong thing, we're not going to be in the next meeting. We're not going to have the opportunity to influence the agenda. And I will say that what has really changed about the department is that instead of consulting the experts about what the right decision is, we're being told, here's the decision that has been made by leadership, and now execute it. And frankly, it feels like the career employees are being used to legitimize some of these decisions that are being made for political reasons.
Wow, that's a remarkable statement. Liz Hoyer, thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you, Caitlin,
for joining us to tell your story.
Thank you.
So this is about restoring Mel Gibson's gun rights after his, I believe, 2011 conviction for domestic violence. And this lawyer, her last name is Oyer, O-Y-E-R, she has said, look, this isn't about politics. This is about safety. This is a safety issue. And that is why that element of it is what initiated her to say, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to be party to this because Mel Gibson is a danger and he should not have a weapon.
Right. And she says that this is also like a 10-minute clip, and she says that up front in the clip about how it increases the likelihood that someone will be killed, that someone will be harmed.
Because Mel Gibson's fucking unhinged.
And just because you're a friend of the president doesn't mean that you should get special privileges.
Right.
And so what she said at the end there about how everyone is on edge, everyone's being very careful about what they say, they feel like the decisions have already been made, and then they get handed the decision and they're told to figure out how to implement the decision and make it happen.
Yeah.
That's not the way this works. That's not the way this should work. And we're seeing countless example after countless example, and who knows what we don't even know about yet.
Yeah.
Dear God.
Well, think of all the people who are lackeys, who will just do whatever they're told to do. Even career people who are just too afraid and are going to cower to Donald Trump.
Right. And that's a scary thought, too. Right. How many people are like Elizabeth Oyer who choose to resign instead of do something that is wrong? She's just going to be replaced
right.
by someone who will give Mel Gibson his guns back.
So everybody who leaves needs to make a big stink about it
totally.
And make publicity about it.
Totally.
So we know what's going on. Don't just leave silently.
Right. And,
you know, to all the Justice Department people who are listening to the show right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sure. So Elon Musk is still wreaking havoc on the government, and he's sitting down with Fox Business to do some interviews about his plans for his Department of Government Efficiency.
He seems very unwell to me.
He has always seemed unwell, but he does seem particularly unwell lately. And
I'm glad people are tuning into it and, like, taking isolating video of him and the way his eyes move. And he, look, I don't know anything about, other than having been high a few times, he looks like he's high as fuck all the time.
So this is him sitting down with Fox Business to respond about what DOGE is doing with entitlement programs.
The waste report in entitlement spending, you know, which is all of which is most of the federal spending is entitlements. That's like the big one to eliminate. Because that's the sort of half trillion, maybe $600-700 billion a year. That is also a mechanism by which the Democrats attract and retain illegal immigrants by essentially paying them to come here,
yes.
and then turning them into voters.
Yes.
So this is why the Democrats are so upset about the situation, because they're losing. You know, if we turn off this gigantic money magnet for illegal immigrants, then they will leave and they'll lose voters.
So not only is this embarrassing because it's just a straight up conspiracy theory from the man who once posted on Twitter that women are unique in their ability to read something and automatically adopt it as their belief without thinking about it critically, when that is absolutely 100% an accurate description of the way that Elon Musk moves throughout the world. And I also think about the people listening to this who are who would be in poverty without their Social Security check, who are like, good for him, yes.
Yeah,
You better not have a don't tread on me flag when you are sitting out here watching every clip of Elon Musk saying, tread on me, daddy. Okay, we don't want to hear from you. I'm so disturbed by this,
yeah.
that people would sit there and listen to him and think that he has their best interest in mind. I don't understand it.
It's the people Devin from Texas is talking about when they call. I mean, that's it. It's a callback again.
Yeah.
And Elon Musk is a guy who's never, ever going to need Social Security
mm-hmm.
because he's made tens of billions of dollars specifically from federal government contracts. And now he's in charge of cutting government contracts to other people. He's not finding any fraud or waste in the contracts that he benefits from.
Right.
The other thing is, he's talking about Social Security here. Migrants do not get Social Security. And in this conspiracy theory that is a white supremacist fever dream about the great replacement theory, the same thing Tucker Carlson banged on about, the same thing Jared Taylor and every other racist Nazi has ever talked about, is that the Democrats want to replace the white population with the brown population and turn them into voters so they'll have total... It's just a conspiracy theory. If anything, based on the lie he's telling here. If anything related to it, because migrants don't get Social Security, but you know what they do? They pay into Social Security. So our system of entitlements is benefited by migrants because they pay in and don't draw anything out.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Yeah, and that's, I'm going to link to an article that I posted on social media a few days ago, too, by Stephanie Kelton. Elon Musk is the reason Social Security is running out of money. And in it, she writes, quote, rising inequality is the main reason that Social Security appears to be in financial trouble. And she goes through some of the details if you're interested in learning more. She's an American economist and academic, and she wrote The Deficit Myth. That's her book. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. We would love to know what you think about this. 657-464-7609 or send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. There's been a few examples of people, of Democrats specifically, getting angry and standing up to Republicans. And I want to talk about a few of those examples in order to reinforce the idea that you should be calling your elected officials and telling them what you want to see from them.
202-224-3121.
Not only that, but you should also be calling them when they do something right and you want to compliment them on doing the right thing.
Do this more.
Yes.
It's a reinforcement
effort.
Yeah.
And they don't just want to hear from you when you're, you know, complaining and pissed at them. It's also nice to hear some positive reinforcement and some compliments. So this is one example. Republican Keith Self misgendered Sarah McBride, and Democratic Representative Bill Keating decided to step in and defend her when this happened.
I now recognize the representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ranking Member Keating, also wonderful.
Mr. Chairman, could you repeat your introduction again, please?
Yes, we have set the standard on the floor of the House, and I'm simply...
What is that standard, Mr. Chairman? Would you repeat what you just said when you introduced a duly elected representative from the United States of America, please?
I will. The representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Mr. Chairman, you are out of order. Mr. Chairman, have you no decency? I've come to know you a little bit, but this is not decent.
We will continue this.
You will not continue it with me unless you introduce a duly elected representative the right way.
This hearing is adjourned.
It's the way you do it.
Yeah, we need to see more of that.
I mean, short of jumping across the table and punching him in his stupid fucking dildo with ears face, this is it.
We absolutely need to see more of that. I have been disappointed that there haven't been more instances of people defending Sarah McBride. And I also appreciate that she responded to him introducing her by calling him Madam Chairman.
Yeah.
Or Madam Chair, I think. But Representative Sarah McBride also said at a Democratic meeting today, quote, "We will not take a lecture on decorum from a party that incited an insurrection. I appear to live rent-free in the minds of some of my Republican colleagues. I wish that they would spend even a fraction of the time that they spent thinking about me, thinking about how to lower the costs for American families."
You know, it's so fucking outrageous that, and this is an indictment of Democrats too, that so often trans people are just on their own defending themselves or having just to remain silent.
Mm-hmm.
So it very much encourages me to hear a Democrat stand up and say, "No, fucker, no, not on my watch. This proceeding will not continue if you're going to continue to be a fucking asshole."
Right.
That's what we need.
Absolutely. So good for Bill Keating, and if he happens to be your representative, give him a call.
The other thing that happened just yesterday was Representative John Larson, I think he's the first congressional district of Connecticut, who went the fuck off about Elon Musk and the Republicans' insistence to protect him from answering questions. If he has a legitimate role in the government of this United States, then he is subject to oversight, and Republicans are doing their damnedest to make sure that is not the case. And John Larson wasn't having it in committee. This is the energy we need to bring in Congress.
A sad morning. very sad morning when this committee, the oldest and most continuous in the Congress, neglects its responsibility and essentially holds this hearing today to block any further discussion. The men and women on this committee are good people. They're honest and caring people. And that's why I do not understand why you would relegate this committee to no longer being of significance and resort to saying you will do whatever Elon Musk and Donald Trump tell you to do. Where's the independence of the committee? Where's the legislature? We're an equal branch of government. And you start off with a blather, and yet look at the empty seats here. Where's Elon Musk? I'm sure he's a genius and is a very credible person because of the wealth he's accumulated. But that does not put him above the law or the responsibility to come before this committee in this Congress. If he's so great, if these plans and all the fraud and abuse that he's found are so evident, why isn't he here explaining it? You know why. Because he's out to privatize Social Security. He's been on television the last couple of days talking exactly about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and what he intends to do. Privatize it. The American people, some of them may have been born at night, but not last night.
So this has the effect of at least showing that someone in elected office is feeling what we are feeling.
Yeah, well, it's also dispensing with the decorum and my good friend across the aisle and all the respect that needs to, fuck that.
Yeah.
We're way beyond that.
But I also feel like a lot of what we've been hearing from elected Democrats feels like lip service.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm very concerned.
Yeah, and we don't care about your concern. We care about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And this is something that made headlines. This is something that took off on social media. And this is the kind of thing, going back to Devin's voicemail, is something that can move the needle for someone.
This is Devin's episode.
Right? It can be like this this video of this Democrat yelling. And what is he saying?
Yeah.
Oh, why isn't Elon Musk showing up to explain why he's making these cuts?
Well, also, if he's so proud of what has taken place and it's so justified and so necessary, he should be champing at the bit to get in front of Congress and lay it all out and explain everything.
Right.
Instead, he's fucking hiding like a coward because he's a liar and he's creating fake receipts and putting them online for a week and then pulling them down because they don't have what they say they have.
Right. And listen, there's been a real dearth of Democrats stepping forward to fill the void of leadership. And there's been a few. Bernie Sanders has come forward as one, and he is doing his oligarchy tour. And he's also coming out here, and he recently said in the press that these are the scariest times in his life because of Elon Musk's growing power, and he's very afraid of oligarchy and authoritarianism in this country. And he's recently been, people have been speculating on whether or not he's running in 2028.
He's not running. He's not running. He's too old, and he knows he's too old.
And to that point, he's going to be 84 this year in September.
Yes, come on.
But in response to that, before we play this clip, I just want to read what AOC said about those people who are speculating on whether or not it means he's running because he's doing this oligarchy tour.
Right.
And she wrote, "Believe it or not, some people's everyday actions aren't motivated by some long-term career ambition, but out of a genuine love for people and a desire to do right by them. Bernie is one of those people. Disagree and loathe him all you want. People trust him for a reason. Bernie does these things because he has long seen and talked to communities for whom the economy and status quo aren't working. If you don't like it, you can go fund some lab-grown person that's been focus grouped to death instead. He's a good person. The dedication to hating him is wild.
I thought that that was going to go a separate way when she said, if you don't like it, you can fuck.
Yeah, well, instead she talked about a lab-grown person that's been focus grouped to death, like Gavin Newsom. Right. Although, what happened to his focus group who told him to sit down with white supremacist after white supremacist on his new podcast?
Literal insurrectionist. Like, Jesus Christ. I really appreciate you. You're a real truth teller, he was telling Steve fucking Bannon.
He called him a truth teller?
He said that you're
a bomb thrower.
Calling balls and strikes, he said.
Jesus Christ. So anyway.
Which is a truth teller, when you call balls and strikes.
Bernie, like I said, has been on this oligarchy tour. He's been hearing directly from people that are affected or will be affected by cuts to Medicaid, cuts to SNAP. And there was this one moment that I want to play where the crowd starts chanting his name and for you to hear his response.
Thank you. Well, thank you all. Thank you. Thank you all. No, 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 no. It is not Bernie. If there is ever a time in American history where it's not one person, but millions of people, this is that time.
I fucking love that guy. That's a 15-second clip, and I got emotional. That is what we need. This is what we need. Why do we not have a Democratic Party that will prop up people in power like AOC, who's young enough and passionate enough and smart enough and communicates well enough to be in leadership? Instead, septuagenarian cancer patient Jerry Connolly gets to be the chair of oversight.
Well, and I just want to say that on the podium in front of him, like, it's not his name. Behind him, it's not his name. On the podium in front of him, it says Medicaid saves lives.
Yes.
The poster behind him is about saving Medicaid. You know, his intentions for this seem to be hearing from people and allowing them to see that someone gives a shit, because right now we've all been thinking, are the Democrats going to do anything? Do they care about what's happening right now? Are they going to do anything? Are they worried about this?
Yeah.
And it's actually nice to have someone going out and hearing from people. He asked the crowd to tell him how they're going to be affected, how they're struggling with money, and people were yelling things out about how they can't pay their bills. And to have someone who is asking you those questions and hearing you and giving you the time and space to talk about those things, that means something.
Yeah.
In a climate when we're all wondering, is he just going to get away with this? Is he going to be allowed to get away with all of this? Him being Donald Trump, Elon Musk, all of them. So we want to just praise Bernie, and also desperately we're hoping for other Democrats to rise above, rise to the challenge, rise to the occasion.
Meet the fucking moment.
Please, for the love of God. And with that, I think we will leave everyone on a positive note, because we need that. Taking care of biz. So this is another Steve Hartman classic. He is one of those reporters, journalists, I don't know what he would call himself, that does like positive, uplifting human stories for CBS. And
CBS Mornings, right? Their Sunday show?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he recently talked to a Baltimore doctor. And just get ready. If you're at your desk at work or you're driving, you're going to cry.
Get the tissues ready.
Yeah. And this is such an inspiring story. So this is Dr. Michael Zollicoffer, and I believe they just call him Dr. Z.
In one of Baltimore's poorest neighborhoods, we found one of its richest doctors. Rich, not in money. In fact, he's pretty much broke.
Righty.
But 66-year-old family doctor Michael Zollicoffer is flush with job satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Just love people. I love to see a rash. If you say you got a rash, I'm going to find you, because I love a bump on your head. You see what I'm saying to you? I love a bump.
Has anybody taken your temperature?
No. Let's listen to my sweetie.
That infectious spirit is part of what sets him apart. Another is his prices. Can't pay? That's okay.
You make everything sound so easy.
It is easy. Forget that dollar bill. Now, I'm going to see you no matter what. You walk in that door, you will be seen. You bring your grandma with you. I don't see her, too. Okay.
But here's what amazed us even more.
Right.
In the nearly 40 years Dr. Z has been practicing,
that one's good.
He's never taken a real vacation.
I think you'll live.
Tells every patient they can call him 24/7, 365.
There you go.
I have his cell phone number.
Does everybody have his cell phone?
Yeah.
He's always available.
This guy seems almost unbelievable.
He is unbelievable because you'll never meet another person like him ever.
A superhero, but hardly invincible. A few months ago, Dr. Z was diagnosed with cancer.
So I got two separate cancers. One renal, one rectal. But I don't give up.
And to add insult to injury, Dr. Z didn't have insurance. There was a whole series of snafus, but bottom line is he had no way to pay for his radiation treatments. Until his patients turned the tables on that ever-giving doctor.
I'm like, let's fight. What can we do?
Dr. Z will not give up on you, so we damn sure ain't giving up on him.
Whatever needs to be done to save Dr. Z, we're going to do it collectively.
So, collectively, they started a crowdfunding campaign. Nearly 1,000 people donated, raising more than $100,000. Today, his prognosis is good.
Right.
He got his insurance back and now plans to funnel any money left over back into the community.
All right, open that mouth up. You know what? I'm going to say something that may seem crazy as heck. I'm thankful that I got cancer because I am the happiest man on the planet, no matter what the outcome. What we have shown and why we're sitting in this table right now to show America, this is what you're about. We about giving. I can't make it without them. And nor can they make it without me.
You need each other.
Let this nation hear this story. Let it hear this story.
And let it follow his prescription for a better outcome.
If you need something, you just buzz me, okay? All right, we'll see what these people say on Thursday.
Wow.
So, a beautiful story, a beautiful human being.
There's still a GoFundMe up. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
More of this. We need more of this.
Yeah. So it's just good, I think, to be reminded that there are good people out there doing good work, helping other people. And especially I need this reminder because when I'm consuming the news all day long and I see a lot of negativity and the pain that is being created by the cuts that Donald Trump is making and that Elon Musk are making, I start to get really in a dark place sometimes.
Yeah, sure.
And it's nice to be reminded that every day people get up and they're going into the community and they're helping people, and that's their number one goal. And there are countless people like that out there. People like Donald Trump, Elon Musk, I do believe they are the minority that are out here to cause pain. I think most people want to help and want to do good things. So Dr. Z in Baltimore, who his GoFundMe is approaching 250,000. So
and then he said if it covers all his needs, he's going to donate all the rest back into the community, which right. is something you can set a timer to. He's going to do that.
Right.
Awesome.
So yeah, hopefully that left you with a feeling of positivity, even if you cried.
So in lieu of dropping the Patreon address again, go donate to this GoFundMe and feel good about doing it. We love and appreciate you. We're going to leave you there. We invite your participation in these conversations. You can call 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email the show at idoubtit@dollamore.com. We love and appreciate you very much. We will see you next time. Take care of yourself. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollamore, and this has been I Doubt.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.